There's interviews with local and national musicians like Glenn Tilbrook, Pat D'Annunzio, Princess Superstar, Chaotic Link, authors, directors, artists, and personalities of all shapes and flavors. That's right after the traditional folk show and just before the Soul Glow Bistro. The Salvage and Recovery Radio Program, Monday nights from 8 to 10 p.m. on WUSB Stony Brook.
And it is the radio station you're listening to, WUSB Stony Brook. The time is 6 o'clock, and that means time for Off the Wall. Very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Wall, broadcasting from Studio One of the WUSB complex here at the State University of New York at Stony Brook. You know, I've noticed that increasingly on various programs, other programs, you know, those alternative programs to us, such as, I don't know, things that you see on the networks or here on commercial radio or things like that, where they feel compelled to tell you the number of the studio that they're in. Broadcasting from Studio 7B of the facility in this particular building. Who cares? Who cares what studio you're in? You know, I mean, who cares what frequency you're at? Obviously, people know what frequency you're at if you're listening to it. But to tell you the what else are you going to tell? The combination to get through the door? You know, the model of the chair you're sitting in? There's only so much people need to know. And, yeah, okay, I am in Studio 1 of the WUSB complex. We have two studios. Well, in this complex, anyway. We actually have a few more studios spread throughout the various places. Some of them we don't even know about. But, you know, it reminds me, actually. Come to think of it, it reminds me. And this is a localism. This is for people that live in the area. If you ever take the Long Island Railroad into Manhattan, and anybody who lives on Long Island, at some point in your life, you've had to do that. And for some reason, as you approach Penn Station, you know, you go underground and all that. It's a big, long ordeal. There's always some loud idiot next to you on a cell phone or somebody who's drunk or something like that. It's never pleasant. But as you get to Penn Station, the final stop, there's all this banter going on the loudspeaker between the guy who opens the door and the engineer, and they're all talking to each other. Yeah, we're coming in on track number 1, and then we'll be taking it to the yard after that. All right, door code 43C. Then take it to channel 2. And why don't they just take it to channel 2 to start with? You know, the private channel, so we don't have to listen to everything that they're talking about, which makes no sense at all to us. I'm not kidding. Try this out. I'm certainly not trying to get people to ride the train, but... Well, this particular train, because it's a demon ride from hell. If you ride it into Penn Station, though, you will see, or hear, all this ridiculous, nonsensical back and forth that you don't need to know. And over the years, for some reason, doesn't matter how many different kinds of trains they get, they always feel compelled to let you hear all of it. And the announcements that you do need to hear, such as, why are we sitting for the last 20 minutes doing nothing? They don't tell you anything. You hear nothing then. You hear absolutely nothing. And if anybody works for the train, I'd like to know why you guys do that to us. And there are plenty of cool people who work for the train, by the way, because I have had to ride it a few times. In fact, just a couple of weeks ago, I had to ride it out here to the island. And, you know, they have these stupid automated announcements. Back in the old days when they had the old diesel trains, the conductor would yell in every car what station you were arriving at. You know, he'd stick his head in the door, say, Stony Brook! And, you know, if you were getting off at Stony Brook, you would know. That would wake you up. But now you have to hear the stupid bing-bong. This is the train to Port Jefferson. The next stop is Stony Brook. Over and over and over and over again. And really loudly, too. But sometimes they turn it off. They turn that announcement off and they make their own human announcements. And a couple weeks ago, they were having a lot of fun. I don't know if they were drinking or what, but... We were approaching Green Lawn, and the guy just gets on the announcement, the PA system, and says, Green Lawn, Green Lawn, Green Lawn, Green Lawn, Green Lawn, 15 times, literally in a row, like that. Then someone else comes on and says, what station is this? And, of course, he says Green Lawn again. It was fun, okay? For a torturous ride, the little things matter, the human touches. Everybody in the train was having a good time. That's all that matters. So, yeah, we won't tell you what studio we're in anymore, and hopefully the train people won't tell you all the technical jargon. You'd think that would be a Homeland Security issue, you know? Giving out all this internal information as to how they're approaching the track and where the train's going to go afterwards. And that's another thing they do. This annoys me. I don't know how they think in the MTA, but if you ever go to Penn Station, look at the board where they announce all the trains. First of all, that's annoying in and of itself. Because I do a lot of traveling, and when I'm overseas, you can look it up weeks in advance and know what track a particular train is going to come in on. It's just, it's the way it is. The train always comes in on the same track. They don't tell you at Penn Station until maybe 5 minutes before the train's supposed to leave, so what that results in is this mass migration of commuters and people who have had too much to drink in the city, and bewildered tourists. They all start running towards the track, going down the stairs at the same time. It's a sight to behold, but really, why? Why do they always have to wait to the last minute to tell you what track the train is on? But that's not what upsets me. What upsets me is if you look at the board, they list all the trains that aren't going anywhere. Yeah, they list the trains that are going to the West Side Yard, which is where they park the trains, and they're not using them. 453, track 17, West Side Yard, no passengers. Why announce it then? Why put it up there for us to see? Is it just to frustrate us and say, boy, I wish that train was going somewhere? It's insane. And they keep sometimes they keep those trains on there all day long. For some reason, the 10 o'clock in the morning train is still listed as going to the West Side Yard when it's 5 o'clock in the afternoon. I don't know. We need to hear from somebody who works for the MTA to explain all this to us, because it makes no sense at all to me. And, you know, I hadn't planned on talking about any of that, to be honest. I just out of the blue, set Studio One, and look what happened. Danger of freeform radio. I had fun today. Well, I guess, you know, in my limited definition of the word fun, this was fun. And when I say fun, of course, I'm being bitterly ironic, so actually, it wasn't fun at all. It was torture. It was something that just got me angry. But it got me angry to the point where I said, boy, that's crazy, and hence fun. Used to be, I could simply pick up the phone and call my bank if I had a question. Well, let me just sort of explain what happened, why I had to call my bank today. When I go away sometimes, I forget to do certain things, like deposit checks, okay? It just happens. And the thing is, I have a savings account attached to a checking account, so there's always enough to cover the checks. It's just the money's in the wrong place. And the bank knows to take it from the other place. They can do that. So they cover the checks. But every time they do this, every time they cover a check that there isn't enough money for, they charge me a huge amount of money. $35 every time. Yeah. So I was a bit perturbed by this. I'm trying to find a way that they can just sort of cover it automatically and not charge me. And apparently the only way to do that is to get a whole new line of credit or something. The whole big thing, I don't want to bore you with the details. I was calling mainly to find out why in tarnation there was a check for $3.01 that had gone through and not made it. There wasn't enough money to cover that, so I got charged $35 for a check that was $3.01. And this is where direct withdrawals can really hurt you. They can really bite you in the ass. Because I have that for a couple of utility companies. And one of them apparently decided to tweak the bill a little bit. They'd already taken their money out, but then they said, you know what, we need a little bit more. So we're going to go back and bill you a second time for a very minuscule amount to correct a problem that we had. Okay, that's fine. No problem. Except when there isn't money to cover it. So not only did I get billed the first time they took money out, but when they went back to sort of fix their records, I got billed a second time. $70. I had to pay in fees for a single utility bill that I didn't have the money in the right place for. So anyway, I was calling the bank just to find out if there was a way to avoid this kind of a thing. I won't bore you with the details as to how that conversation went. Suffice to say, it went on for an hour. But used to be I could just dial a local number and somebody in my local branch would pick up and say, hello, this is the bank. Can we help you? Wow. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine just calling and having a human being pick up and asking if they can help you? Not even putting you on hold, just picking up the phone. I even know where the phone is. I've been in the bank. Black desk phone, pick up, person says hello, can I help you? The other person says yes and gives them the details, and before you know it, a beautiful relationship is in the works. Well, I want you to listen to what happens now. All right, can we get the magical pulsating dial tone? Okay, we get a pulsating dial tone here at Stony Brook. And now it's a solid dial tone. I'm going to dial the local number And, of course, they're not there now, but this is what happens in the middle of the day as well. Instead of getting the person who picks up and says, hello, can I help you?
Welcome to HSBC, the world's local bank. In order to provide 24-hour customer service to you, calls to your branch telephone number are now forwarded to our customer relationship center.
Do you see the irony in that?
On existing accounts,
right,
or to make payments or transfers, please press 1.
Let's just say I want to talk to an operator right away. I want to...
Please press 2.
Okay, I'm going to hit...
lost or stolen, please press 3.
No, I feel like I've been lost or stolen. I'm going to hit 0.
In order for us to service your call, you must select from one of the following options. For customer service inquiries on existing accounts or to make payments or transfers, please press 1.
Okay, fine. I'll press 1.
Account,
I'll press 1.
Apply.
There,
for
I give it.
For checking or savings, please press 1. For credit card, please press 2.
Fine.
For home equity, select credit
I'll,
or business
I'll press
revolving
1.
Line of credit.
I just want to talk to a human being.
In order to better serve you, please enter your checking or savings account number.
I don't
followed
have
by
that.
The number or pound sign.
I don't have that with me. I'm going to hit 0.
The account number, 0, is invalid. Please enter your checking or savings account number, followed by the number or pound sign.
You see how it goes. Get into this big, huge fight with a machine. But the irony is saying that we're your local bank, and now all the calls to the local branch have been routed to one central location where they can't even spell the town you're in. That, my friends, that's a little bit too much to handle, especially when you're just trying to deal with something fairly simple. And how many times, I'd like to know how many times that has happened to people out there, in everything from the phone company to the cable company to banks to utilities. Everywhere it seems there's less and less human contact and more centralized phone banks where they know less and less about your account. I can help you less and less. Many wonder why the economy is falling apart. And the economy is falling apart. My God. I was watching the news this morning, very early this morning, actually, before the markets opened. And I was watching what happened in other parts of the world. I think Tokyo, the stock exchange closed, what, 7% lower than when it opened? And when the Dow Jones opened today, it dropped 500 points. 500. Now, you know, I love chaos, and this is the kind of thing that I live for, is to just to see the mayhem and anarchy in the streets. But alas, it didn't last. They somehow were able to recover a bit and only lose 150 points or something. It's strange how the whole world is panicking more about the economic system in the United States than the United States is. Everybody in Asia is going nuts. European stock markets are collapsing. And it's all because we're facing a recession in the United States. That's the only reason. And in the United States, yeah, we're facing a recession, but, you know, so what? The Giants made the Super Bowl. Hey, that's news. And, of course, the latest debates. You see the debate last night? The Democratic debate? It was pretty lively. Hillary and Obama going at it, and Edwards trying to get into it. I still think things are going to be interesting this year with the whole campaign. I just hope that there's more participation from individual people and as many candidates as possible. Last week we talked about how Dennis Kucinich was supposed to participate in the debate that took place a week ago in Nevada. How a judge had actually said he would stop the debate if Kucinich was not included. But guess what? The debate went on, and Kucinich was not included. You know why? Because NBC, the media conglomerate that was sponsoring the debate, went to the Supreme Court of Nevada, the Supreme Court, to get him kicked out, to get him kicked out of the debate. And in what has to be the Newspeak accomplishment of the year so far, they said this was a tremendous victory for freedom of speech. I mean, incredible. Because, and the reasoning is that, well, we're a news agency. We feel we should have the right to present the news as we see fit. Never mind what's fair to the people. Never mind what the people want. never mind what the whole democratic process demands. We wish to exclude this person. We should have the right, under the First Amendment, to do that, because we own the media. Whatever. Point is, Dennis Kucinich was not allowed to participate in that. I think the debate would have been a lot more interesting, and I think all future debates would be a lot more interesting if he was included, if other candidates were included. But alas, our system just is not meant for that kind of a thing. It's really, really sad, but unfortunately true. All right, got a lot of good feedback for last week's show where we had Lurid on, who was recently freed from a prison in Ohio. And I got to say, it's really good to help somebody acclimate back into what passes for a free society today, where you can just sort of hang out and relax and just get used to not being in prison, which is a horrible thing. I've known too many people that have been locked up for ridiculous reasons. And if you listen to the shows, the three shows in the last year that he's been on talking about that particular case, you realize just how messed up our system is. How somebody like that should never have been put in that situation to start with. But it's cool because you sort of get to... I like this with anybody who visits, who comes to New York. I like doing the touristy things, you know, showing people various parts of the city or parts of the island that I never really do myself. I never really go to these places. You know, Midtown Manhattan, Times Square, Rockefeller Center, that kind of thing. Just sort of are showing off the city, and it's places I never go to. And one of the things we did, which actually was quite interesting, and this is what I recommend people do when they come to New York and they don't have a lot of money and they want to do something that's kind of interesting. You take a ferry ride. You take the Staten Island Ferry, which doesn't cost anything. And the reasoning behind that is so that people who live in Staten Island won't be held captive there. They can escape if necessary. So they can get to the ferry and they can cross over, get to Manhattan, and breathe in some sanity. I guess that's the rationale behind it. So you do that, and you go right past the Statue of Liberty. You see various things in the water. It's a fun way to spend an hour or two. But when we went to the Staten Island Ferry Terminal, and this is an indication of all the kinds of interesting things that happen when you go to New York. You never know what's going to happen next. We got to the ferry terminal. Brand new ferry terminal, too. They just rebuilt all of this. There's this crowd of people. Well, there's a crowd of people there all the time, but this crowd of people is sitting very neatly and properly in chairs, like bleacher style. We see them as we walk in the door, maybe a couple of hundred, all just sitting there, staring straight ahead. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, they sure got these Staten Island commuters trained well. How exactly did this happen? So we kind of looked around. It was a very bizarre sight. You just sort of walk into a busy, bustling ferry terminal, and there were these people just sitting there quietly. And I walked up to this person who apparently was guarding these people, standing there with some brochures, and asked, what in God's name is going on here? And she told us that this actually is a theater production. There's this traveling group of people putting on shows in public places, and what happens is people just sit in these seats in the public place, and they're watching somebody. They're watching somebody interact with random people. This person is wired, so his voice or her voice is being transmitted to them, and they're all wearing headphones so they can hear this, and they're simply watching a play unfold in front of them. And it goes differently every single time. And I thought, wow, that is really cool. That's the kind of thing we need more of. And, of course, it didn't take Lurid and I very long to make the guy who was actually wired, because he actually had all these wires in the back of his neck. And we watched what he was doing, and it looked like he was talking on a cell phone and walking up to random people. And it wasn't very hard to get him to walk up to us and ask if we were a particular person. And I'm proud of my response. My response was, I'm a Hollywood writer and I'm on strike, so I can't answer that. I heard the crowd laugh. Okay. So that's the kind of fun thing that can happen in New York City without ever knowing that something like that is going to occur. It's cool. It's cool to have surprises like that, and sometimes you only see them when you're showing people around. So thanks to all you people who come around and make me show you things. You never know what might happen. Okay, I've been busy. I've been really busy the last few weeks, so sorry if I don't sound as prepared as I normally do. I usually have all kinds of things to discuss. I've been involved in various secret projects. Basically, the secret projects meaning that things I can't discuss because they're ongoing and of a nature where it takes time to develop them, and actually talking about what they are would sort of distract from the projects themselves. It's really nothing that should concern you. It's not, I know what some people are probably thinking, that, maybe Emmanuel's finally signed up and is helping the government track down hackers or various people committing thought crime or subversives of various sorts, since he's always moving in their circles and things like that. You know, it really kind of bothers me that people would think that. I mean, seriously, why would you think something like that, that I'd be involved with that kind of a thing? I've been doing this radio show now since 2003. If I haven't made myself honest and trustable in your eyes, I don't think there's anything I could possibly do to earn that respect at this stage. Fine. You know what? Supposing I was doing something to help out Uncle Sam, to help out the United States, would that necessarily be such a bad thing? I mean, we all live here, right? We all want this place to continue to exist. So, you know, like, okay, you have somebody, like, walking behind you in a busy office building. You don't know who that person is. That person could be working against you. That person could not share your interest or your taste at all. Yet, you still should hold the door for that person, right? It's common courtesy. So is it not common courtesy to help out the land that you live in a little bit? I think, you know, we all benefit from that, right? Is that such a bad thing? No, of course not. And if my efforts were actually used to help, say, stop evil people from doing something, is that a bad thing? To help put some of these people away? You know, people who are fighting to undermine everything that we live for, that we stand for, that we believe in? How can you begrudge me that? All right, you know, it's when you think about it, it's really not such a bad thing, is it? To put away people who are intent on doing us harm. Because they're guilty people. They're people that are evil, that are up to something, and should be stopped. And, okay, you know, maybe, in the whole investigative process, where you put away a bunch of guilty people, maybe while this is going on, occasionally, once in a while, an innocent person will get caught up in the fray, you know, and get pulled in as well. It happens. It's the nature of the judicial system. Every day we're reading about people who are locked up for decades and are innocent. It's part of the risk. Would you have me not take that risk and not try and lock up the evil people because occasionally an innocent person might get caught up in it? Do we really benefit from that? I mean, is it not worth it if even 100 innocent people were dragged into this, if it stops one really evil person? Of course not. I mean, of course it is. It's worth it. You're still stopping evil. And, you know, even if there are no evil people, is it not the thought that counts? The fact that you're trying to help, yeah, sure, maybe 1,000 innocent people got sent away as a result, but you're trying to help. You're trying to make things better. It's not your fault that the evil people got away or that they're not around. The important thing is that we all try our best. All right? So, I mean, let's not be so quick to judge. I mean, how dare you judge me? How dare you judge me for what it is I'm trying to do? I could crush you like... Well, okay, the point is I'm busy. I've been busy the last few weeks, and haven't had time to prepare the show, working on various projects. Let's just leave it at that for now. You'll find out what they are soon enough. Things have been going on in the news, haven't they? Yes. Things have been going on in the news, none of which look very interesting to me. Look at this. This is the most interesting story of the entire week, I think. A Canadian Foreign Affairs Department document includes the United States and Israel in a series of countries where prisoners are at risk of being tortured and abused. The training manual for Canadian diplomats also lists Afghanistan, China, Egypt, Iran, Saudi Arabia, Mexico, and Syria as possible places of torture. The manual lists U.S. interrogation techniques such as forced nudity, blindfolding, sleep deprivation, and light. Is that the right way to phrase it? Light is a form of torture? I mean, yeah, obviously if you shine light at people constantly, that's torture, but, okay, just the phrasing is kind of weird. It's all under the heading Definition of Torture, and it names Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, as a site of possible torture and abuse. The manual was inadvertently released to attorneys for Amnesty International, who are working on a lawsuit involving alleged abuse of Afghan detainees by local Afghan authorities after Canadian troops handed them over. Very interesting. But of course, the people behind it mean well. All right. What else is going on? Some programming notes. Next week, we have an abbreviated show. We're only going to be on 45 minutes. And in all likelihood, it'll be the show we made in Berlin, standing at a train station. I know that doesn't sound too exciting, but I think it's pretty good. I think you'll be proud of it. Should be. So that should be on next week, assuming that everything is in order as far as that goes. And that, of course, is remnants from my recent voyage over there for the Chaos Communication Congress, which took place in late December. That's just really cool, hanging out in foreign cities, Berlin being one of my favorite. This is something, actually, for those of you who go to Berlin, you've got to do this. This is important. And I mean this in all seriousness. There is a monument there, fairly new monument. It's only a couple of years old. It's by the Brandenburg Gate. And of course, everybody knows where the Brandenburg Gate is. That's used to represent the division between East and West. It's the Holocaust Memorial. And you might be a bit puzzled when you go there the first time. First of all, there is a whole big museum inside, but on the outside is what is really, I think, fascinating. Because what it is, basically, is a series of vertical stones, vertical slabs, that start off rather short, maybe a few inches off the ground, and then keep rising until they're above your head. And then, before you know it, you're surrounded by them in all directions. And you may ask yourself, well, what does this have to do with the Holocaust? Just a bunch of stones. And I have to admit, I was, the first time I went there, I was a bit perplexed myself. But then I went there a few months ago, actually, and I was with some friends, and I thought it would just be fun for all of us to sort of go into it almost full speed and then try to find each other. And that's when I realized, I'm not even sure if this is the actual intent of it, but I sure felt it. You go into this thing, it looks harmless enough, and before you know it, you're in a maze. It's not really a maze because it's a grid, But if you're trying to find somebody, all that you see when you walk down, when you walk across a pathway, for a split second you see a face of somebody, and they're either near or they're far, and they're passing by too. And you only see it for a split second. And then you're on to the next one, where you might see somebody else for a split second. And if you do this while you're trying to find somebody, and you tell yourself that this is the only way that you can find them, in other words, you're not going to text message them or call them on a cell phone or even shout out their name, this is how you're going to try to find them. You have a friend in there someplace. You realize how the odds are stacked against you. If they're anywhere in this complex, what you're seeing are random faces, strangers. And if you really let yourself get drawn into it, you feel an increasing sense of desperation. Will you ever find these people? And I just think that feeling of desperation and solitude while being surrounded by people is really what the point was. And I was hoping the people I was with were feeling the same thing. But when I finally got to the other side, after wandering all throughout it, they were just waiting for me with bored looks on their faces. Hey, what took you so long? You know, you just got to sort of plunge yourself into these weird monuments and historical places and try and understand what they're all about. I'd like to know if other people have done that. I could be totally wrong with the intent of this thing, but I was kind of surprised with how it hit me. And of course, people go there all the time for all sorts of fun purposes, and I guess that's okay, to sort of lose sight as to what it's really all about, people chasing each other, which is dangerous, by the way, because you could run into anybody, and it's blind turns everywhere you go. Other people smoke pot in there, and probably have all sorts of suspicious encounters of various sorts. The point is that it's there if you want it to be there for the feelings that it may evoke. All right, let's take a look at some listener mail. otw@2600.com is our email address. We get a lot of mail, but I'm told by some people that we get more mail if we were more visible in other places, such as if we had a MySpace page for Off the Wall or a Facebook. Can you have that, a Facebook account for a radio show? I don't even know. The point is, I don't have the time for this. I barely have time to make it through the day and read regular mail and make regular phone calls and things like that. If there's anybody out there who wants to run something like this, let us know. Maybe we can do something like that. I don't know. I'd like to know how people find the time. There are so many people I know who, they have their MySpace page, they have the Live Journal and Facebook and Twitter, which keeps people updated as to every step you take throughout the day. And then there's text messaging and instant messaging. I honestly do not know. First of all, I don't understand why all this information about you is being put out constantly, but I honestly don't know how you're able to do it. How you're constantly able to send updates and carry on a life as a normal human being, or even a half-normal human being. But if you're able to put something up that will help us out and get word of the show out, by all means, we'd like to hear about it. It's just, there's only so many things that we can do here. Anyway, our email address for now, otw@2600.com, and of course you can listen to all the old shows at www.2600.com/offthewall. And let's see, we have all kinds of mail from people that have all kinds of things to say. Let's see. We have a lot of leftover gun letters. Shall I get into a couple of those? Let's get into a couple of those, only because they're fun and I can get them out of the way once and for all. And of course, most of them are very critical of my feelings and my stands on guns, which I still think people don't really understand. Not guns, my feelings on them. Because I try to explain them, and I keep getting all kinds of misinformation thrust back at me as to things I never said. Emmanuel, I usually agree with most of your views, but your views on gun control, I do not. You see, here's the problem. It says, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. And the definition of infringe, okay, you give me a whole big definition of infringe. I know what infringe means. Let's not get into that. So if you limit the rights, that's infringing on them, which goes against the amendment, the Second Amendment. Also, once you start limiting one thing, they are more likely to go on and mess with other rights. Sort of going the other direction now, though. As it is now, our rights are already infringed for bearing arms. I personally am a convicted felon. It is a long story, and needless to say, I'm innocent, but hey, everybody says that. If you want, we can talk about it further, but get back to my point. My crime, and plenty of others, has nothing to do with guns, yet their rights and mine are infringed so that we cannot have firearms anymore. And I've also said that if your offense has nothing to do with violence or gun abuse, then, yeah, that's not fair. You should be treated like everybody else. And more importantly, and I really do think this is more important, there are so many people who have their right to vote taken away if they're convicted of a crime. And I think that's something you should really be upset at. A lot more than this. And if not, ask yourself why. Why is a gun more important than the basic democratic right to vote? It's like saying you're not a person. Anyway, nowadays you can get a felony for just about anything, as the Lurid story certainly proved. I know of one person who was having an argument with his girlfriend on the phone, and he said, "I wish you were dead." You can get charged for saying that over the phone? Whew. All right. Better watch my mail for indictments. I'm sure it's a little over the top and, yeah, kind of messed up thing to say. Yeah, it is a messed up thing to say. You know what? People say messed up things all the time. It's part of being human. And that's also, it speaks to part of my rationale why people walking around with guns all the time are likely to do something crazy because they have the means to. People snap for all sorts of reasons, and it's better to snap with words than to snap with deadly objects. I know it's a controversial view, but that's just the way I feel. Anyway, this guy got convicted of felony phone harassment and did a year in jail. I mean, okay, you know, I don't know if there's more to that story or what, but it seems very bizarre and unfair if that's how it played out. And furthermore, guns don't kill people, people kill people. Hey, good point. Good point. Guns don't kill people, people kill people with guns, though. And while we're at it, I'm all for gun rights. I'm all for guns having the right to exist. I'm all for guns having the right to do whatever guns do. It's the people. Like you say, the people, that's the problem. People with guns. That's what you got to watch out for. All right. I know it's cliche, but it's true. There are plenty of guns in Canada, and they aren't killing each other like Americans do. Very good point. Look at states such as Arizona, where the concealed weapons laws are much more relaxed. You don't hear about mass killings and a lot of gun violence there. And that's because a lot of people have guns, and that's a deterrent to people. I don't know. I'm not convinced about that at all. Just think, some guy goes on a mall rampage there, and he won't get very far before someone pulls out a gun and shoots him. You know, this speaks to the whole idea, the whole premise that the reason for having guns is to protect yourself against all the other people with guns, and then refusing to admit that guns are the problem. Obviously, people with guns are the problem, but people have unfettered access to so many armaments. That is a big problem in a violent society. And yeah, you can say there isn't the same problem in other societies where people can have the same access, although I really think we have much more access than most societies do. But you can't deny that is a problem. And it should be looked at as a problem. And the only solution is not simply to ban guns. That's very simplistic, and it would never work. The solution is to reach people so that people act responsibly, so that people don't feel the need to walk around with all these armaments and stash them in their homes. It's unhealthy behavior. Plain and simple. And I don't feel safe if everybody in a mall around me is armed. I already avoid malls, but I'd avoid them all the more if that was the case. Because, like I said, people snap for all sorts of reasons. And I see some pretty bitter arguments going on in malls. And if everybody was armed who was taking part in those arguments, I definitely would not want to be anywhere near them. Anyway, thanks, Wes, for writing in with that letter. And let me just come up with an alternate view here, another alternate view. Actually, I just thought of this now. Based on your definition, going out of your way to define the word infringe. Well, let's look at that Second Amendment. Let's look at the definitions of those words. The right of the people to keep and bear arms. Well, we know what keep means. We know what bear means. I don't see anything in the Second Amendment about firing guns. So you know what? Here's what I propose to you. You guys have all the guns you want. Keep them close to your heart. Bear them as much as you want. Although, in public, I think public rules should apply, what the public wants. And I think the public doesn't want everybody running around with guns. But firing them, not a constitutional right. There you go. Let's see how that one flies. But seriously, it's not in the Constitution that you have the right to fire a gun. You can bear them, you can keep them. All right. Glad we straightened that out. That's so many letters on this. Okay, I have a good story about the police in Santa, California. One night I was going to my work to pick up my check when my engine went out, and I pulled over to the side of the road. A police officer pulled up behind me, and I got out to ask for help. The officer came out and asked me what happened. I told him what happened. He then proceeded to ask if I smoked anything other than cigarettes. What that has to do with my car having engine trouble is beyond my understanding. He decided that I needed to have a sobriety test. I thought this was unnecessary since I can't drive a car that doesn't run. After passing the drug test, he accused me of being a meth user. He then looked into my car with no probable cause or warrant and saw my knife on the center console, a 6-inch hunting knife that was bought at Walmart. He said I could be taken to jail for having that. He then decided to help me push my car 10 feet to the dirt area that I wanted to park in so I could go home and get some tools to fix the problem. From that experience, I came to believe that the new motto for the Santa Police Department, and all police department, for that matter, was to accuse and harass. Signed, Uriah. Thanks for that revealing bit of information there. Let's see what else. That wasn't really gun-related, was it? I'm going to focus on that for a moment. Okay, this letter is in reference to the last few Off the Wall episodes in which the discussion of guns and their ownership have been a focus of discussion. The Bill of Rights of the Constitution only enumerates already inherent rights, those which exist regardless of enumeration. These rights are only recognized and stated in the Constitution as an affirmation of the pre-existing right and the restriction of the government to interfere with those inalienable human rights. As much as you would balk, and rightfully do so, at restrictions of what books you can read or the freedom of assembly to which was suppressed during the Republican Convention in New York in 2004, you express a different attitude towards the right to self-defense and personal enablement. You question the need to own a semi-automatic rifle, specifically how it would be applicable for hunting or sport. While the use of a semi-automatic firearm may be of limited use in hunting applications, they are regularly used for sporting purpose in terms of long and short-range competition, amongst others. The sporting application of the arm is utterly irrelevant towards what I own and see fit for myself, my personal empowerment, and my defense needs. The issue of what type of arm I own is of no importance to you or any other American. The overwhelming majority of firearms owners never harm anyone innocent with their semi-automatic military-style arms, yet have the ability to defend themselves with relatively modern technology, and regularly do. Regularly do, eh? I'd like to know more about that. Do you really believe that rights expire within a specific time frame, and that we should be restricted to antique arms and designs? Well, you know, we used to have the right to smoke anywhere we wanted to, and that sort of expired, that sort of changed. Things change with the times. And I dare say that the times of the 1700s are different than the times of the 21st century. And it's time that the people decide where they want to go on this. And I think we all ought to listen and discuss, and not just draw lines in the sand and say, this is the way it's going to be and no other way. I know when you're holding semi-automatic weapons saying that, your voice tends to speak louder, but let's try and be reasonable here. See what's best for all of us. Okay. Jumping to the end, forgive me, it's a very long letter, but we are running out of time. To summarize my thoughts, there is no need to justify to you or anyone else the type of small arms an individual chooses to own as free men. I don't care if you don't like semi-automatic rifles any more than I care the government would like to demonize the use of encryption tools such as PGP. Nice try, but not quite the same thing. My freedom of speech, while it might be dangerous, doesn't really kill people. If I go nuts. Anyway, God forbid such a dark day would come that we would need to use weapons to such a cause, but I'd hope that there'd be enough brave and free men to at least attempt resistance. All right. Ceramic God, thanks for the letter. I wish we could read more of it, but again, we are running out of time, and there are a couple more I'd like to get to. Here's a letter from Hugo from French Canada up in Montreal. Rest assured that most of the 33 million or so inhabitants from north of the border, except for most Albertan rednecks, and yes, we do have rednecks in Canada as well, most of them share your views on gun control. This is the country that's being touted as having all the guns. I would more specifically say that most, if not all, Quebecois, and I don't know how to say it plurally, Quebecoises? I don't know. People live in Quebec. Most of them are seriously aware of the potential dangers of semi-automatic weapons. We had the École Polytechnique massacre a few years ago where we lost 14 young women who would have most probably been part of the elite of our small and culturally unique North American French-speaking community. We also had another school shootout just a year ago at Dawson College where the deranged perpetrator had a Beretta CX-4, which is a mild-powered semi-automatic weapon that still managed to show us how dangerous it can be in the hands of a twisted mind. After each of these events, we as a society came to the conclusion that if the killers did not have access to semi-automatic weapons, the amount of victims of those heinous crimes would have been much smaller. The Polytechnic incident led to more stringent gun control laws in Canada, but since firearms legislation is under federal control and not under provincial jurisdiction, it is still possible for one to purchase and obtain a semi-automatic weapon in a somewhat easy manner. But if the province of Quebec, as a legal entity, had legal control on firearms management, it would definitely ban such weapons from civilian circulation. To give you an example of the local way of thinking about the subject, the same 411 call, or 911 call rather, you talked about recently on Off the Wall, the one that took place in Texas, was played during a popular radio morning show. And that day, everyone at the office was talking about how stupid, inhuman, completely uneducated, and seriously dangerous the freak was who called 911. We all concluded that such people should be incarcerated in a mental institution for the criminally ill for a long period of time. Now, we're talking about the case where this bozo in Texas saw two people breaking into a house next door and decided to open fire on them even after reporting it to the police. While the police were on the phone with him telling him not to do that, he shot and killed both of them. This is not somebody who was in danger. This is somebody who was witnessing a crime. What he perceived to be a crime. And decided to take matters into his own hands. This is exactly the danger. And, you know, there are a lot of people out there, and I think this is sick. A lot of people out there say they got what they deserved. And I don't think anybody's going to say that you shouldn't be punished for breaking into a home, but to be executed on the spot? I just don't see that. We're fundamentally coming at this from different angles, if that's your view. And I think that's part of the problem, that people think that execution is the answer for so many things. Anyway, the guy clearly seemed to be way too emotionally juvenile to exercise his right to bear arms. Well, he could bear them, but then the firing part again. He still managed to kill two small-time crooks without due trial, which is a clear violation of those individuals' basic rights, rights that are granted by the same Constitution this poor son of a Texan cow probably thought he was protecting. Now, can you imagine if he had a fully automatic weapon? The whole neighborhood would probably have been sprayed by loose projectiles. As I heard so many times on the subject of recreational drugs on American TV channels, think of the innocent children. And on a second note, the way you perceive the right to bear arms is, I believe, the only way it can be seen. Wow. You have no idea how How seldom I hear that. It is comforting for me to hear an American citizen who thinks about such issues in a lucid, rational, and humane manner. Wow. Of course, it's coming from a Canadian, but still. It seems to me that most Americans I know, some of whom I consider my friends, are kind of mixing different concepts a little when it comes to freedom. Never forget that your freedom ends where mine and my fellow citizens' liberties and rights begins. It is to be remembered that the right to bear arms was voted by your forefathers in order to make sure that the newly emancipated American people would have the means to defend itself if somehow the King of England and his lackeys wanted to get their territory back. In such a situation, it would be easy to organize militias in order to defend the new land of liberty and freedom. It was not decided so in case there were a few colored people breaking and entering into your neighbor's property, even though those aforementioned forefathers were, for the most part, slave owners. That is another story. Okay, that goes on for quite a while, too, and let me just sum that one up very quickly. Basically, all I'm saying is, instead of learning and thinking so much about such a subject as gun control, learn about your rights of communication, which are getting rarer with each new president you had for the last 40 years. You will learn that those said rights are the safeguardians of your right to say, the hell with the way our corrupt and ethically distorted society acts, behaves, and, more importantly, lives. Life is short. We should strive to make it easier for each other so we can enjoy it while it lasts. Thank you, Hugo, for that nice letter. Again, it's rare to get letters with such nicety, isn't it? Anyway, that kind of... there's so many more letters to get to. Well, write to us, otw@2600.com, and we'll try to get to them all. It might take us a year. Always interested in hearing different viewpoints. And we'll be back again, like I said, next week with our special show from the train station in Berlin, which hopefully will be a lot more exciting than it sounds. For Off the Wall, Manuel Goldstein, have yourselves a good night and a pleasant tomorrow.
My neck is broken. WUSB Stony Brook.